Connected. Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Back in June, the U.S. Department of Agriculture approved the first lab-grown or cultured chicken meat for commercial sale. It's the first cultured meat to be approved in the U.S. It's grown from animal stem cells. No actual animals died in the making of the meat. Don't look for it in the grocery store just yet. So far, it's only available in selected restaurants. And this is different from the veggie meat alternatives you might have seen, maybe eaten, that are based on different kinds of plant or mushroom proteins. A Wisconsin meat science expert joins us now for a look at the science behind the new products and some of the challenges in bringing it to wider markets. We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Coming up in just a bit, we want to hear, would you eat lab-grown meat if it became available to you? If you are a vegetarian for whatever reason, is this something you think would count as vegetarian? Are you looking forward to this or not? If you eat meat currently, would you want this in the mix? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jeff Sindelar is professor and extension meat specialist in the Department of Animal and Dairy Sciences at UW-Madison. Jeff, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
Before this news from the USDA permitting this stuff, you had looked into this some and wrote an information thing about this cultured meat, and you wrote that this is new to us, but the technology, the basic technology behind it, has been around for a long time. Can you talk about that a little?
Absolutely, I would love to. So the technology behind cell meat or cell-based meats has been around for around 20 years. It started out very slowly, and has grown into the industry that it is today. However, the process for working with cells in this fashion has been happening for well over 100 years, and it's been utilized for lots of different purposes. One of those has been to help develop vaccines and means for treating diseases such as polio.
Now let's talk about the process here. First of all, what kind of animal cells can be the starting point for this cultured meat?
Sure. So really any type of animal cell, or excuse me, any type of animal that possesses cells that are ideal for being good candidates to generate and create these cell-based products or these cell-cultivated products. And when I say that, I mean that right, we need cells, or in order to be successful in this technology, cells need to be identified that are able to provide the products that are necessary to create a desirable and successful cell-cultivated product, right? So kind of to use an analogy, right, if we want to feed a baby versus feed an adult, we have to think about different types of food, right? And really foods that we're feeding a baby, we're trying to nurture that baby so that they grow and proliferate and are very healthy and strong, as opposed to foods that we feed to normal healthy adults. The same concept is really important to be applied to the cells that are chosen, selected, and nurtured for a proliferation and growth into these cell-based products.
So skipping ahead a bit, Jeff, I've taken this cell from a chicken. I have a bunch of undifferentiated chicken cells now. How do we turn that into something that you and I might recognize on our plate? What does it take to take these cells and make something that looks like, I don't know, a chicken breast, or when that comes along, a pork chop or something like that?
Yeah, no, great question. So this is what has been the topic of interest in heavy research for the past, in development for the past 20 plus years. So it takes a group of people with different expertise in cell biology, biochemistry, chemical engineering, analytical chemistry, as well as meat and food science, who with their different backgrounds and knowledge and skill sets can come together and tackle these challenges. But it really starts with those cells, right? Oftentimes they're things like stem cells or these cells, right, that are selected that have specific properties that they can grow and grow quickly and have the ability to adapt to the environment of the development as well as the cultivation. Those cells then are combined with some type of media, and the media is rich in a variety of things such as essential amino acids and different macro and micronutrients as well as growth factors. Those cells are combined with that media, cultured media, in a bioreactor, so a very controlled environment where it's sterile, warm, right, and very conducive for growth. And then over a matter of a few days to a few weeks, enough of those of cell growth occurs, which is called biomass, to be able to start having enough cell stuff, for lack of a better word, that can then be either transformed into some type of ground product or go through some additional steps where it is put into like a lattice or a structure that can then be grown and developed into something that might look like a chicken steak or a pork steak or beef steak or something like that.
One of the hopes for this in the long run, if and when this becomes something that can be done at scale, is that it could be overall environmentally a plus compared to the way we get meat now, you know, raising animals in the environment. The thing you just described sounds like a lot of work, fairly energy intensive. What would it take to get from where we are now in this early stage to something where this is a net environmental gain? And I know there's a lot of different ways to measure that.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I don't think that the answer to that question is clear at all as of today, because there's a lot of things that have to be understood, right? The cell-cultivated industry, that technology is still pretty young, and it's really developing, and it's developing very, very quickly, right? and it's to a point where we'll start to better understand, I think, that question in the next 5, 10, maybe 15 years. But right now, it's really unclear whether cell-cultivated products are more environmentally friendly or less environmentally friendly than the traditional animal agriculture routes.
Talking to Jeff Sindelar. He is a professor and extension meat specialist in the Department of Animal Sciences, Animal and Dairy Sciences, I should say, at UW-Madison. Talk about the idea of cultured meat products that start with the cell. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Jeff, I'm trying to figure out who regulates this and how it could be regulated. And I'm guessing people in the industry and people in the government are trying to answer some of those questions. What do we know at this point?
For sure. Regulation is one of the many questions and one of the many hurdles for this technology. All are achievable, right? As of now, there are two companies in the U.S. that are approved to manufacture these products, to produce these products. The regulation for these products are handled jointly by FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, as well as the USDA, United States Department of Agriculture. And essentially, the FDA, since they oversee biotechnology, bioengineering, ingredients, and so forth, they regulate up to a point until cell proliferation or growth of those cells occurs. At that point, USDA takes over regulation, and then they do everything thereafter, which also includes food safety and labeling.
Now, Jeff, as I mentioned at the outset, it's just this cultured chicken product so far. Do you anticipate seeing other birds coming down the pipeline, mammals, cows, pigs, goats, and so on, fish? What are you watching for next when it comes to the product lines that we might see?
Yeah, another great question. So for sure, right, chicken is on the market now. I fully expect other species, right? Everything that we see in the grocery store, right, beef, pork, lamb, poultry, anything that's protein-based, I think will eventually be able to be produced following these cell-cultivated technologies. Yeah, it's just a matter of time, for sure.
Jeff, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for the questions.
That's Jeff Sindelar, professor and extension meat specialist in the Department of Animal and Dairy Sciences at UW-Madison. We talked to him about some of the science and the process behind lab-grown meats, also called cultured meats, what it would take to bring it to wider markets. Now we want to hear from you. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Would you eat this, if it were available in your neck of the woods? Is this something you want? Vegetarians, vegans, would this fit your diet? Yes, no, or you're trying to figure that out if you currently eat meat. Are you interested in these alternatives? Do you like plant-based protein products that, you know, fill in that spot where we might put meat otherwise? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up the conversation about lab-grown meat or cultured meat. There is a chicken product on the market now in select restaurants. Won't be coming to Wisconsin probably for a while, but we're opening things up for you now. Let us know your thoughts on the idea at 800-642-1234. Are you concerned about the ethics of, you know, the way we grow meat now, the way we get it now, its impact on the environment? Does that inform whether or not you eat meat? Do you want this kind of product, cultured meat? If you're vegetarian or vegan, would you eat it? If you eat meat now, do you need it? And if you have religious restrictions on what meat you can eat or when, how do you think this fits in? I think people are trying to figure that out right now. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's go to your calls now. Greg is with us in Davis, Illinois. Greg, hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Greg?
Well, the trigger was I'm a vegan, and most vegans are offended when they're conflated with vegetarians. Vegetarians obviously will eat some animal products such as eggs or cheese, and most vegans are pretty much almost 100% of vegans are going to tell you that the cruelty involved in any kind of animal agriculture is just not worth even touching. So I just want to make that distinction. I personally don't have a problem with lab-grown meat. I wouldn't eat it myself because I'm sworn off of anything that would look or taste like meat. But I don't have a problem with any vegan wanting to eat that if they are curious or what have you.
And, Greg, I'm going to ask you a question that probably you're sick of and you've heard a zillion times, but I know people, when interacting with vegans, wonder what you do instead of meat. What do you, don't you miss it? What do you do in place of it? What do you tell people?
Well, I think there are numerous meat substitutes on the market that are outstanding. For example, Burger King has the Impossible Burger. That's a meat substitute. It's designed to taste like beef to help wean people off of eating meat. So that's one example. I think its competitor, Beyond Meat, is just as good, if not better. Although the one product that I like to point out, particularly like people in Wisconsin might like, the Impossible Bratwurst is one of the best meat substitutes I've ever tasted. So there's plenty of products on the market that are good.
Greg, thanks a lot for calling in at 800-642-1234. We are opening the lines up for you to share your thoughts on the idea of cultured meat products. Does it, this is like taking a cell from a chicken, that's what's on the market now, growing it, turning it into some sort of chicken-like product, cooking it up. Does that gross you out, or are you excited about that idea? Hope it comes to you soon. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Tracy joins us now in Manitowoc. Tracy, hi.
Hi. I had a question as to whether or not there have been any studies done on the effect of this cultured meat on humans.
It's pretty new. The FDA has approved it, Tracy. I don't want to speak to all the science behind it. The notion, at least so far, the FDA seems to be okay with it. What do you think? Is this something you would serve up or no?
That would be a solid no for me. I mean, we don't even know if that would be something that would be healthy for us.
Gotcha. Do you look for meat substitute products at all in your life, Tracy? Or are you just fine with eating meat as is, or a little of both?
I'm actually going the opposite direction. I'm looking for more farm-grown meat, less processed, the better.
And is there any particular product you found here in Wisconsin where you're like, yes, I've got a great local source for it?
I do have some sources in Manitowoc that they grow their own pigs and their own cattle, and the meat is absolutely delicious. It costs a little bit more, but it's a great way to get your protein.
Okay. Tracy, thanks a lot for sharing that with us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We heard from Dave on the Ideas Network Facebook page who says, there's plenty of venison running around my yard, eating everything in sight. Lots of fresh meat to be had. I'm guessing venison will probably be a little lower on the list, but who knows? That could come along someday. You could join that conversation on the Ideas Network Facebook page or email ideas@wpr.org or call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on the idea of cultured meat. Caller on the line, but I'm not able to take them just yet, it looks like. Nope. Okay, it's still time for you to share your thoughts, though. 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. We've got Kathy. There we are in Milwaukee. Kathy, hi.
Hi. I might eat it. It's an interesting option because lab-grown meat is going to be a lot cleaner, free of antibiotics, and that's a big reason why I don't virtually never buy chicken right now. And I'm wondering about the cost. Is this going to be more expensive than or on the same price line of higher-grade meat?
Interesting, Kathy. Thanks a lot for sharing that. Well, we took a few calls there, but you can keep the conversation going over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let us know your thoughts on the idea of lab-grown meat. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a tour of a special cave.
Bats are an important part of Wisconsin's wildlife, but over the last decade, a fungal disease called white nose syndrome has devastated bat populations in the state and across the country. In rural Crawford County, a cave that once was a tourist attraction is now protected by the Mississippi Valley Conservancy. It's a safe haven for the bats to hibernate and help scientists develop ways to stop the disease. Most of these bats have settled in for the winter, but before they returned, WPR's Hope Kerwin traveled underground to learn more about this unique cave.
So the entrance to the cave is inside this little building. Welcome to Kickapoo Cavern. I'm Sarah Bratnober. I'm Communications Director at Mississippi Valley Conservancy. This doorway is really the only way in for people, but if you look up there, you see a little slot along the edge of the ceiling there. That's where the bats come in. Some bats fly south in the winter to relax and be snowbirds, but there are four species of bat. They tend to hibernate here in the Northland, and so they look for places to hibernate where they're not going to freeze to death over the winter. There are a few low spots, so we're going to just take a little duck down here. We are in a completely different space now. We're underground. Oh, this must be 15 feet tall, the ceilings here. All around us, we're seeing kind of a flowing forms of limestone that are being dissolved. It's very damp in here because water is a part of what's going on that created this cave and continues to shape it. Do you see those cages under the stairway? We're making research accessible for the DNR and their partners to actually study possible solutions to the white nose syndrome. It's a fungus that's in this cave, and it makes their skin itch. It makes them wake up. And in the middle of winter, then they start flying around looking for something to eat, and they just don't have the calories stored for them to be able to fly around. There is nothing to eat down here in the winter, and most of them have starved as a result of being awoken. One of the things we do is just help people to be aware of bats and what bats need and why bats are good and what people can do for bats. But, you know, a lot remains to be seen about how the bats will do with this fungus in the environment. Will they develop a resistance to it? Is that why some of the bat populations in Wisconsin are coming back in the last year? We don't know yet. Okay, here we go. We're just about at the end of the cave now. And if we go down to the very end here and look over the edge, you will see that is a pool of water right there. A lot of people have never seen anything like this before. And kids who get the chance to come down here are really wowed by it. You know, what a great way to introduce them to some of these ideas about conservation.
WPR's Hope Kerwin took us on a tour of the Kickapoo Caverns. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast. And find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCollum.
I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time here on Wisconsin Public Radio.